the message that we're going to see in chapter 28 is a contrast between two things that people seek. One is wealth, and the other is wisdom. Commentators debate exactly what the contrast between them is. Is it that wealth is available? You can find wealth in this world. Wisdom is just not there. In which case, we have to ask the question, what does wisdom mean? When you say wisdom isn't there, no one can be wise, so we'll come back to that. But that's one way to look at it. Another way to look at it is that he's saying precious items and wealth are found if you work really hard. Wisdom is not acquired by hard work. Wisdom is acquired by reverence for God. If you revere God, you will acquire wisdom. That's a second approach to this chapter. A third approach to this chapter is that wealth disappears while wisdom endures forever. Sorry? Yeah, wealth is ephemeral. It has, well, not just ephemeral, but there's a defined end to it, as we'll see. Not just that it's ephemeral. Ephemeral suggests something that fades away on its own. No, this is God destroys your wealth. That's the statement. Yeah. It's a very difficult chapter for a few reasons. First of all, the style doesn't fit what we've been doing so far. Meaning, Job, if you had to pick one aspect of the way Job talks, not the content, but the style, okay, describing his mode of speech, what adjective would you choose? Defiance. Sorry? Direct. Very direct. Very declarative, right? He makes statements. He doesn't really have much ambiguity. And he's there's no ambivalence in Job. He's arrogant, maybe.
Unnuanced.
Well, that's also part of this. Sarcastic. Right? Angry. Well, opinionated goes along with the theme. None of that is here in chapter 28. Even though this seems to be a continuation of Job's speech, the style is entirely different than what we're going to see here. That's number one. Number two, unlike chapter 27, it doesn't seem like it's a response to any particular claim made by the visitors. It's talking about how wealth is easy to find, maybe easy come, easy go, wisdom is harder to find. What did that have to do with anything they said? What does that have to do with the rest of the book? What is, you know, you reach this point and they say, you know, you made it to chapter 27. We're going to give you a break. Here's a little commercial, and then afterwards we'll return to the battle. Yeah.
I don't speak Hebrew fluently. I can only speak word after word. But is it not an entirely different tone? It looks to me like a bad folk song. Like when I sort of just read the English translation in JPS.
Well, it's much more pure poem.
That's what I'm.
You know, I mean, we've seen poetry throughout. But it's much more of a pure poem and certainly not anything resembling a dialogue. Yeah.
Wisdom is necessary to understand the whole situation that is.
Right. So Stephen starts on an answer for us, which is that wisdom can be a capital W. Wisdom doesn't have to mean someone who looks at things and understands them. Wisdom can mean comprehension of how the world works. And this chapter could be understood as a statement about, you're all trying to tell me you know how the world works. This is how you get to wisdom, or frankly, that you can't get to wisdom, that it's impossible to get to wisdom. Carla?
Wouldn't wealth also imply it's material and therefore perishable, whereas wisdom is spiritual and belongs in the realm of the divine, which you may attain if you are worthy or if you know the way to it. But it's the divine quality, rather, which maybe a human can attain or not, but wealth is as perishable as a human being.
Why did you make a distinction between material wealth and wisdom as spiritual?
Because the wealth that is described here, it's precious metals, it is cattle, it is, and these things come and go, as you say.
Right.
But wisdom is something that is not tangible.
Ah, but that's different from spiritual.
No, but also it's all spiritual because I think it would be, it's generated from the realm of the divine, whereas this is dug up from the
earth. So that's a big assumption. We have to see where that could fit in. It can fit in, of course. But wisdom can also just be intellectual. It doesn't have to be spiritual per se. There could be.
I mean, as an opposite to material.
Right.
Matters.
True, and I could be. We'll have to see more as we go into it. But Shana, you were going to say
that maybe the argument, the subtext here is that why should you expect fairness in the distribution of material goods? That's not the pieces in God's game that matter.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you lose your money in your house, oops. Well, that's not what you should have put your, quote, faith in the first place.
But why would Job be the one saying that? Is this more of
addressing his loss?
So in other words, this is actually Job answering his own questions.
Yeah.
An interesting possibility. Does he seem to think he's gained wisdom?
I don't know.
I mean, to this point in time? He doesn't really see much of an upside. I think it's hard. I also think, I mean, I like Shana's idea, but I have a hard time seeing it fit with what's going to go forward here. The speech in chapter 28 does fit in very nicely with the end of the book. When God is going to come out and speak, finally, because He will. You knew that already. He was in the cast. But when God comes out on stage, so to speak, He is going to emphasize human inability to comprehend wisdom. So in that sense, it does sort of anticipate where things are going. In that sense, you see that. And as Carla intimates, the last verse in the chapter is actually going to emphasize, of all things, Yiras Hashem. Awe of God, reverence for God. And not only that, it's going to do something that is bona fide strange, but only somebody who has read the first 27 chapters in the Hebrew will realize why it's strange. If you jump quickly to the last sentence in this chapter, let's see if anyone catches it. Sentence 28. Vayomer la'adam, he said to the man, which we assume is mankind rather than, you know, Adam the first. Hein yiras Hashem hi chokhmah. That's the phrase, that's the problem. Reverence for God is wisdom. What was odd in the Hebrew in that clause?
The name for God.
The name for God. Bingo. What has the name of God been throughout this book? Shakai or Elohim?
Hashem.
What? Power names, precisely. Suddenly here, he's talking about God using this very different word. It is what's called in Hebrew the Shem HaMeforash, the ineffable name of God, the name that we don't pronounce, unless we're going to say that this is actually Aleph Dalet Nun Yud. I have to look and actually, how do they have it here? They would write it as is. Hang on. They have it, no, it's not the Shem HaMeforash, I'm sorry. It's the name of God as Master. I don't want to go into the various names of God right now. But the point is, it's the name of mastery, but it's a different name. It's not the name he's been using for God all along.
It could even be the reverence for mankind.
I don't know.
I know what the Bible critics would make of.
Yeah, so the critics, right. No, the critics, we know what the critics are going to say. This was something that was parachuted in or put in there to make the book more observant and so forth. I will maintain exactly what Newsom said in an earlier stage, you know, when dealing with the problems of chapter 24, that, you know, she doesn't make that statement here. She has another take, which we're going to see, for what to do with this chapter. But what she said back then was that it's true that earlier generations of critics tried to say that sort of thing. Recent generations have tried instead to actually interpret and explain, because that earlier approach is really a function of embarrassment of interpretation, rather than because there's any textual evidence to support it. Now, she doesn't say it here. I don't want to put words in her mouth, but I happen to think that that's applicable here too. I think there are ways for this to fit. And I'm going to offer three different approaches. One approach is the approach taken by Rashi and Mitsudat David. Remember I said to you in the beginning of class today to remember chapter 27, sentence 6, when he said, I continue to hold on to my claim of righteousness, right? Mitzidkatiya chazati, I will pursue righteousness, right? That's what he said. So I'm going to say these outside, and maybe in the beginning of class next time we'll see how they fit inside. But I want to give you the overview of the approaches. So Rashi's approach is that what Job is saying here is, I will not retract my statement. God is indeed unjust, but I still believe in righteousness. And I still believe in Yirat Hashem. I still believe in reverence for God, because wealth is meaningless. All the things I would acquire by being a bad person ultimately come to an end. They're ultimately of no meaning and they don't endure. Doing what's right is what matters. And therefore, when he talks about Chachma here, when he talks about wisdom here, what he actually means is Torah. And that's Rashi's approach. It reads this as fitting into a very Jewish message, that it's Job explaining what he said earlier. When he said, I'm going to maintain my righteousness, now he's telling you why. It's all about the fact that righteousness has value in and of itself, regardless of what God does. That's one approach. Second approach is Ibn Ezra's approach. And Ibn Ezra says that he is continuing the argument against the visitors. And what he's saying is, some people benefit and become wealthy because wealth is to be found in this world. So some people will indeed become wealthy. But no one can understand why I am suffering, because there's no wisdom in this world. The emphasis here is, all of you visitors thought that you were going to teach me how the world works, and you had insight into the way the world works. But you don't know what you're talking about, because wisdom is not to be found in this world. And that's the essential message, as Ibn Ezra sees it in the chapter, is wisdom is not to be found here. And that's a second approach. So you have Rashi, who says that the goal here is to say, I'm going to be righteous, and this is why. Because it has value, being righteous. It leads to wisdom. And you have Ibn Ezra, who says, the point is that wisdom isn't found in this world. You're not going to find it here. And so stop trying to tell me about it. And then Newsom, who says that what's going on here is a comment on everything that came before in this whole dialogue. She distinguishes between the wisdom dialogue and the wisdom poem. What happened until now was a wisdom dialogue. People are debating ideas with each other. And what this chapter is doing in this poem about wisdom is it's saying the whole dialogue is useless. This whole thing, we've been going back and forth and no one's convinced anybody else and we haven't come to any conclusions, that's inherent in the process. You can't. Because there's no wisdom in this world, and therefore, everything we just spent the last year studying, she says, Job is now saying in chapter 28, forget it, not going to lead you anywhere. Because ultimately, wisdom is not to be found here. And this is Job's observation, sort of like Ibn Ezra, but I think stronger in terms of what she's doing here and seeing the opposition between this chapter and the previous. But fundamentally, what she's doing is really, I suppose, another version of what Ibn Ezra is saying. That this is a negation of all the debates that have come before it, and therefore it sort of clears the table before what comes next. That's the way that she sees it. So what we'll do is, God willing, in the beginning of next class, we'll see this inside in the sources that I brought you on the sheet, and then we'll actually read chapter 28. Thank you very much.